So this is what I wanted to do. And also, of course, our ultimate aim of many quantum people, quantum information, is to get qubits. Already we have many condensed matter qubits, excitons, electron spins, nuclear spins, carbon nanotubes, topological excitations. And on top of that, we are looking for new qubits coming from this. Okay. Now, yeah.
Away on the previous slide, I heard the word exciton come up a few times, and I never really knew what they were.
Please repeat it.
Excitons.
Exciton, what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, suppose I take a best insulate diamond, then I shine light and create an excitation across the band gap. So, I will create a hole and an electron. Then, since the hole will try to pull back the electron, they form a bound state, like hydrogenic bound state. And typically, the binding energy of these excitons are very, very low, because I create a hole and I have an electron, they are running around and they are in a dielectric medium. So, the effective coupling between electron and hole will be reduced significantly. And you get a hydrogenic-like bound state, which is called exciton, whose energy can be absorbed only few milli electron volt, 50 milli electron volt. Whereas in hydrogen, the binding energy is 13 electron volt. So, these are all for practical purposes like hydrogenic system with solid state complications, but they live in insulators. So, these are all the excitons.
And when you say bound state, they are literally in real space.
Quantum mechanical. No, they can get delocalized, they can be in block states. So, it is like a hydrogen atom. Imagine a hydrogen atom and imagine replacing proton by positron. So, you have a positronium, then it is as light as electron, it can move and form a wave. So, proton is slightly heavy. So, in this case, the great thing is electrons and holes will be typically as heavy as an electron. So, they can move with very low effective mass and you can control them. And occasionally, they may recombine and emit a radiation and they will be scattered by phonons. So, the whole field of exciton is a very big field in solid state physics. In fact, what you can do is you can imagine shining light laser in the diamond and creating a high density of excitons. And these excitons, by definition, they are bosons, because you have a particle and a hole, so they are two fermions. And you can also create them in a spin singlet state, then they can undergo Bose condensation. So, that is called exciton droplets. So, in fact, a whole field of quantum dynamics, qubit and so on, is emerging from the field of exciton. So, does that answer the, yeah. Excitons, electrons, you know, other things that you know. Quantum control. This is amazing that we have been always measuring quantum effects even at room temperatures. I think nothing can beat, like when you look at the sun's radiation, it's a black body radiation, and whenever you measure low frequency content of the sun's radiation, it's a black body radiation, it's a quantum effect. Similarly, if you measure specific heat of diamond at room temperature, it is much less than Dulong-Petit's law. So, it is a quantum effect. Similarly, when you measure electrical resistivity of copper metal, it has a temperature dependence which is quantum mechanical. It can be explained only by using Fermi surface and so on. Yes.
Sorry, I don't know so much about materials. For the diamond and the specific heat, could you explain a little bit about why this is?
Good. So, diamond, it turns out, is a very hard material. So, the average phonon frequency of diamond is very high. So, it has a phonon spectrum, so which is characterized by what is called Debye temperature. And the Debye temperature of diamond is about 1000 Kelvin. Whereas a soft material like sodium chloride, it will be much less. So, when you look at the specific heat of diamond, which is what Einstein looked at, even at room temperature, there are deviations from classical theory of specific heat. So, it is a quantum effect that in that sense. Similarly, if you look at the
quantum description of hardness.
Exactly. That is how Einstein began the quantum description of Einstein oscillators and so on. So, when you do spectroscopy, you see lines, you know, absorption at some wavelength. That is a quantum effect. So, similarly, in optics, we do NMR experiment. But what is interesting is Avogadro number of atoms, 10 to the power of 23 per cubic centimeter, they combine to give you this quantum effect. So, we have been dealing with macroscopic, like, you know, a bucket of water or a grain or a small nanocrystal. Now we are going to smaller and smaller. Now we wish to control single or a finite number of molecules, atoms, electrons, nuclear spins at a time, manipulate and induce dynamics in limited Hilbert space. This is our aim. Because then, in fact, if you look at some of these things, fascinating things are happening. There was a talk by 2 weeks ago in the colloquium, our friend Benny Yoshida. He spoke about ADS-CFT correspondence in the using qubits. It turns out you can discretize the issue of ADS-CFT correspondence, the ADS space, and the the boundary space, and then replace them with qubits, and you can simulate some of those physics there. So, and for those is you need to have limited Hilbert space and have control. So this idea. So we have achieved this control amazingly, and it all started with many people. So, for example, quantum dots, you must have heard. What you do is you have a simple way to just a tiny piece of semiconductor. Then you add an extra electron. There is an unpaired electron. It's occupying a larger volume than an atom, like few hundred angstrom unit size, and you can control it. So this has been used as qubits and so on. But now, with use of lasers, optical tweezers, optical traps, and lasers, several things have happened, and which is what I will briefly. In fact, this is a very nice article by, these Nobel Prize lectures are fantastic. Like Arthur Ashkin, he got a Nobel Prize in 2018 for what is called optical tweezers. It's amazing that, all this started several few centuries ago when people looked at the comet, the tail was always pointing away from the sun. Then somebody said there is a radiation pressure. And that is like, it's illustrated in this picture. You have a photon impinging on a mirror, and the photon gets reflected. So it does impart some momentum, and the mirror does move. So that's a basic idea. You can measure it these days. Now you can imagine that happening in a dielectric, a small ball. Photon comes and then gets refracted and then comes out, and then there is a momentum transfer. So if the ball is light enough, you'll be able to see the recoil. And that is what is being used in what is called a laser focus, and they got Nobel Prize. Three people, I forget the other two. I think Chu and no, I don't remember. Okay. So the idea is that you have a laser beam and then focus it such that there is it forms a neck on the way. Then you can imagine this force due to light. You can also illustrate it in terms of microscopic photon absorption and emissions and so on. But the basic idea is momentum conservation and energy conservation. What you find is the bead, the circular bead or the spherical bead or a plastic bead feels some force and it gets trapped in the light. It's amazing. So whenever I give a talk on this, I tell a joke that I learned when I was a student. So we used to have, when we receive our, when we are received by our seniors in the undergraduate college, they used to have a party. So one guy told us a joke, which I still remember. It's to do with this. This I'm talking about many, many years ago. So the joke is the following. There are two madmen sitting in some dark room, and one fellow has a light. So he switches on the light so he can see a beam of light going. So he asks his friend, so I have a beam of light and I have two beams, I have two lights. So can you hold on to it and climb up? So this is a question that he asked. The other fellow thinks about it and he said, yes, I can do that. But what if you switch it off on the way? So that was a joke. That's what is literally happening here. This light beam is actually material particles are able to hold to light beam and climb up. And this is described here. What you have is, you have a plastic ball to which a DNA molecule is attached, and then there is some other ribosome and comes out, then there is another bead. So you have these two beads trapped by this laser beam. You have managed to put a DNA molecule between the two, so you can move it, and then you see the way, as a function of time, discrete extension. these experiments, real experiment. This is discussed in detail in this Nobel lecture by Ashkin.
So you have the two blue balls are plastic.
Yeah, two balls of nanometer size, and then you glue or you attach DNA to them. So you have two balls, and these two balls are held by optical tweezers because of the force that I was talking about. Now, if you move the laser, since the ball is in a potential well, it will stay there, and it will, depending on the forces, it will pull the DNA, and that is what is happening. And the DNA is actually going through some other molecule, so it comes out in steps. Each time a amino acid or a nucleic acid passes by, there is a jump.
But at what point is the breaking happening?
It's the breaking.
Did you see
exactly. So there is a break point. So before it breaks, they do this experiment. So the break point will and these are all piconewton. The forces involved are very tiny, and you can measure them. So this is a control at the level of molecule. So they have actually now sequenced a DNA. Now you can imagine a DNA. Previously, you want to sequence a DNA. It's very difficult. So to dissolve them and count the amino acids. Now you can, through the nature of forces, for example, if it were a guanine, the force will be something. If it were the andidine, it will be something else. So you can even use it for biological purposes. So all kinds of experiments have been done. Similarly, you can play with viruses, how viruses insert DNA into their prohead and so on. It's a very fascinating field. So how with the control of light, using laser light, you can do all these things.
Yeah, okay, so I guess the point is much, for a second I thought you were saying there's something quantized going on in that graph, but that's a separate question.
Yeah, exactly, it's a break. Yeah, right.
I'm inserting like one new piece of...
Correct, exactly. So...
But really the cool thing is, because you're talking today, I guess, about quantum control.
Exactly. Now this is still a classical control. Now I'm going to come to quantum control.
Oh, okay.
This is a classical control. So they got Nobel Prize for quantum control, a classical control. Then comes our friends, others, who did quantum control, use similar ideas, laser cooling. See, it's amazing, laser can be used for ablating. You know, when they make some new material, they take some piece materials together and then shoot it with laser and they form a plasma, and then they ablate it and form a new system, new materials. Now you can also be cool and use laser to cool the atoms. This is the thing. So there's a beautiful, again, Nobel Prize was given in 1997 to Stephen Chu, Kohan Tanuji, and William Phillips. What they did was, they used laser, the basic idea of absorption and emission and momentum conservation, and they did cooling of atoms. So how do they trap atom, first of all? Using the idea that we had before. So one way to trap atom is, imagine the system of lasers. So you can imagine this XYZ directions and have lasers, so they will form a standing wave. So the atom will feel a trapping potential from whatever physics we had saw before. So that's a simple way to trap atom. And you can trap one atom, million atoms. Then what is amazing technologically is that when you look at a small volume here, in free space, there is air. So there will be so many air molecules, nitrogen molecule, oxygen molecules, and so on. So you have to evacuate it. For example, in this chamber, you should not have, it should be under very low pressure. And then you put the atom that you favorable, sodium atom or barium atom or yttrium atom, and then let them be trapped by this light using the principle that we had saw in the previous paragraph. Now when you know atom, they have quantum states. Suppose, let me think about the simplest atom, hydrogen atom. It can be in the ground state, it can be in the first excited state. Similarly, I can think about heavy atom where the excited states will be small, closer. Then I can manipulate. And there will be also hyperspin splitting because this electron is coupled with nuclear spin, so there will be small splittings. So I use these levels as qubits, the same way I used, you remember, in the case of hydrogen bonded ferroelectrics in the second lecture, I said that there is a hydrogen atom which can be in two positions, the hydrogen bond. So this leads to splitting of energy levels like this, the lowest to nearly degenerate. So I focus on this, and that's my qubit. So in this problem, the qubits will be electronic energy levels, which I can control by laser. So the laser holds them, some other laser comes, which excites them. And then depending on how weakly it is coupled to the environment, it will live long, only natural lifetime will be there. So all these things are used in what is called laser cooling. And I had the pleasure of listening to Kohan Tanuji when I was a PhD student at Bangalore. He gave 10 lectures on quantum mechanics. So he was visiting and before he got Nobel Prize. I have not seen Phillips and Stephen Chu, but that was long, long back. Okay, so, yeah.
I have two separate questions. So firstly, I thought with laser cooling, the idea was that you basically point the laser at the point where you want to, well, maybe I should ask that the other question first.
Yeah.
I always thought that optical tweezers and, sorry, it's a bit complicated. I thought there were two separate things, optical lattices and then optical tweezers, and the difference with optical tweezers is that you can move.
You can move, correct.
Yeah. And then I guess laser cooling was...
You don't move them. In fact, sometimes what you do is you have a bosons in condensate, you move the lasers and transfer them. You can do that also. For example, in order to have some matter wave interference, you bring two cooled atom cloud together. How do you do it? By changing the lasers position. So you can make them interfere, matter wave interference and so on. So lots of things are there.
So I guess the first question is, I always understood laser cooling as the mechanism behind optical lattices and optical tweezers.
Correct. So I skipped many things. What happens is, here I have told you that atoms are trapped, but then typically atoms will have very high velocity, they are at room temperature, so you have to slow them down. So there are something called Doppler cooling, and so basically you suppose an atom is moving this way, you make it absorb some excitation so that there is a recoil, so it loses its momentum. So bring it from thousands of meters per second speed to like few centimeters per second speed. So that is used also, that's not laser trap, that's not laser cooling. So that's why these guys got Nobel Prizes. So you cool it in a very clever way by basically using emission, absorption, momentum and energy conservation. So that's called Doppler cooling, and various cooling methods are there.
Yeah. Okay, I guess that's another way to phrase it. Yeah, I'm just trying to put it together with the way I've had laser cooling explained to me once before, which was, yeah, it's basically a harmonic oscillator where you use the resonant frequencies of, for example, the atom to kind of shift it away from this position where you want it to be, but then it's off resonant, so it doesn't feel the force as strongly.
Right. So there are various schemes.
Yeah. Okay.
I have not told any of the scheme. I have just told. So I did not go into the detail. Let me see if I have this. As you said rightly, there are many modes. One is the center of mass motion, harmonic motion like Einstein oscillator. Another is internal excitations, a nuclear spin excitation. We use all of them, depending on which one you use, the frequencies will be different. So that is how you control. Okay, so this is about laser cooling, and just briefly about laser cooling. And then once you cool it, you have many atoms, and you can, depending on the atom, the total spin of the nuclear and electron, the valence electron, typically they are like cesium, what is it, monovalent atom. So cesium or sodium or potassium. So the nuclear spin, if it is also a spin half object, electron spin half, they can form a singlet or a spin one. So the combined spin will be a Bose system. So you can have a, if it is a zero spin, you have a zero spin Bose condensate. If it is a spin one, you have a spinorial Bose condensate. And you can play with that degree of freedom, and lots of things can be done. And several Nobel Prizes have been gotten after this, Ketterly and company. There are beautiful articles in the archive, in the internet. So I will not, I am just pointing out, and unfortunately, I think there is no cold atom lab is not there in Waterloo, University of Waterloo. But people do simulations, like next one, Rydberg atom. Our friend, colleague, Roger Melko and company, maybe you are also involved in it.
Yes.
They do, simulation. That is, many, before you do experiments, you simulate the system and then get to get some idea about numbers and so on. And then, Rydberg atoms are fascinating. We are used to thinking about 1s2 a state and eigenstates. So we have radially symmetric wave functions, radially asymmetric 2p, x, p, y, and so on. But nothing prevents us from exciting an atom to a very high excitability. In principle, let's say n equal to 200. Then the corresponding radius will be extremely big. Then there are many, many degenerate states. Then when you form linear combination of degenerate states, they won't be stationary. They will start moving. So I will show this picture. Wonderful. So you notice, this is basically what you do is, you excite an electron to some highly excited, the quantum numbers are given here. Like 40, you know, principal quantum number is 40, and then you have few, and then they start looking like orbits, classical orbits. And then,
okay, so what is being shown here?
Yeah, what is shown here is a wave function mod square as a function of time. Because if I excite it to one eigenstate, it will remain there. But then typically I excite it to a linear combination, like a wave packet state, and they start moving. And they start moving ideally, in fact, at some point when the radial quantum number is very large, if I form a small enough wave packet by superposition, the orbit will be like Keplerian orbit, become semi-classical. So that is what is illustrated in this picture. Yeah, the principal quantum numbers are different, and then you choose different L and M, because once you go to higher N, you have several L quantum number, so form a superposition.
And maybe could you explain a little bit the history of research on Rydberg states, because that's something I've always been trying to find someone who knows about that, because nowadays, people know, oh, Rydberg states, or the people I've been around know how to use them as qubits, but not so much the history of why people got interested in Rydberg states.
We can discuss it privately.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I will be very happy to, whatever I know. So, this is just an animation of the richness of Rydberg, just in terms of dynamics. Now, I'm going to show other richness, just a picture. Now, the other richness will come.
And where did you find this page?
I will give you the reference.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So this is a very nice article which appeared in 2000 about Rydberg atoms. So, you know, it puts in a nice table in a nice way. So if you have a hydrogen atom, energy levels, the energy goes as 1 over n square. Then the level spacing goes as 1 over n cube. Then the radius goes as n square and so on. And remarkable things happen. When the Rydberg atoms are very big, the van der Waal interaction coefficient goes as n to the power of 11. It's almost like hardcore repulsion. Similarly, the polarizability goes as n to the power of 7, because the ion and the electron are well separated probabilistically, so you can easily polarize them. So the polarizability increases, then dipole-dipole interaction coefficient also changes. So enormous changes happen as a function of n. This is being used in the Rydberg atom manipulation, as I show in the next slide. For example, now you, what do you do? Again, you use laser, trap one Rydberg atom, and this atom is supposed to be in an excited state. Now, when this is an excited state, neighboring atom will be very difficult to excite them because of the strong repulsion. So naturally, it will be in the ground state. So you use this kind of property of effective interaction between neighboring atoms in a Rydberg, different Rydberg states. And then in a limited Hilbert space, you will have effective Hamiltonian. That could be your favorite quantumizing spin or a Heisenberg Hamiltonian or PXP Hamiltonian, and you do wonderful things. That's the field of Rydberg atom. And here this talks about simple Rabi oscillation between two states. Okay. Is it so? Now, this is a very important point. What is being used is this property of, because when a Rydberg atom is very excited, the next atom can essentially feel this electron. So there can be a very strong repulsion, and that goes as 10 to the power of 11. So this is being made use of, and what is remarkable is you have a control. You can keep the Rydberg atom there by lasers, and then you can address them, and as you know, it's done in the group of, in here, that even though you have Rydberg atom in chains, you can address them in such a way that the 7th Rydberg atom interacts with the 25th Rydberg atom more than the neighbor. And then so that you can imagine building a three-dimensional lattice of Rydberg atoms by doing this. So there are simulations and all kinds of things, are beautiful things are being done, Rogers group. So again, you have a quantum control over atoms in their excited state. Now people are talking about Rydberg atoms of molecules. Because suppose you take benzene has excited states, then benzene have more degree of freedom. So they are talking about that, and I do not know what is happening, but people do talk about Rydberg molecules. And somebody told me that Rydberg atoms can be there in astrophysical context. Because there, atoms are there, they can get excited. If the natural line width is very small, because you notice that the transition dipole moment to other Rydberg states, a radiative lifetime, becomes larger and larger, n cube. So if I have a Rydberg atom which is n equal to 1000, then I have a 1000 to the power of 3 fold advantage in terms of lifetime. So it will remain forever. So I think there are some astrophysical searches for Rydberg atoms there, out there. Okay. Now the next topic that I would jump is, I thought I will give a feeling for cold atom and then Rydberg atoms and now ion traps. This is the this is what the lab that we will visit today. So there is a theorem, Earnshaw's theorem, which is a simple statement that if you have a collection of static charges, be positive or negative, distribution of charges, away from the charges, the potential has to satisfy Laplace equation. So that means I can never have a potential which is minimum at some point in space. So if I find a minimum, then there will be a transverse direction which it has to be maximum. Because it's del x, for example, it will be so this defines the curvature. So if I have a positive curvature, I have to have a negative curvature in some other direction so that the sum is 0. So according to this theorem, which we learned in electrostatics, you can never have a minimum. So you cannot trap a charge, static charge, in a field of electrostatic configuration. So what do? Do what Kapitsa's pendulum. We used to do this when I was young. You know, I'm sure you must have done it. Some fellow has, you know, you can balance it like this, has a world record of balancing it for 3 hours. So I can't do it even for 3 seconds. But the basic idea is for following. That is, you self-consistently move your hand so that it doesn't fall. In fact, Kapitsa's pendulum is a beautiful example, mathematical example of this, wherein, I do not know how many of you heard about Kapitsa's pendulum. See, if I have a pendulum like, you know, suppose, which is standing up. Normally, the pendulum is standing down. If it's standing up, you know the potential will be maximum. So, it will be very unstable, it will fall down. But however, if you shake the pendulum like the way I did, then at some time average, you can create effective local minimum. So then it can be trapped. That's called the Kapitsa's. There's a beautiful mathematics behind it. And all these ion traps, that is a trick. Because electrostatics tells you that you can never hold it. Then why not apply some time-dependent electric field, and before the thing falls away, you trap it back. So I will show it in the next animation. I'm sure this will be much better than the previous one. Beautiful animation. So there is something called a Paul trap, where what you have is you have a positive charge and another positive charge and negative charge. So it's a quadrupole. So if I'm sitting at the center, suppose I have a two-dimensional world, then an electron or a positive charge will be attracted to this. So there will be minimum in this direction, but however there will be maximum in the other direction. So that is what you see in this dynamics. What you find is, as it is oscillating, in a small disturbance will move it and then it will run away. Then what do? You make the quadrupole, for example, rotate. Because once you rotate it, the surface will change. So before it falls down, the maxima comes. So it gets trapped. So this picture shows that you can adjust the frequency. I will show the mathematics of that. So that it always remain in the vicinity with very high probability. So this is what we will see in the lab today, because they do this. So they have this, so there is another trap called pending trap. The mathematics is very simple and straightforward. So this is what I already explained. For example, if you look at the potential at the center of this quadrupole moment, x square minus y square, so that the del square vanishes, then imagine rotating it. So you have a cos omega t, and then when you solve it, then you get a Mathieu equation, and then you can find, depending on the parameters, it will not escape from the thing. So this is the idea. And lots of chaos physics is involved. I will not go into the detail. Now, our colleagues and they have a beautiful review article, Rizibul Islam, Crystal and Munro and others on reviews of modern physics 2002, and they talk about, so what you do is you have in this ion traps, typically you have charged ions, positive or negative, so they have strong Coulomb repulsion, then they are also bound, then for depending on your time scale, it is moving, but then you are going to create some internal excitation of this atom. So that may not care about this. So you will have to be very careful about the time scales. So for you, it may be moving, but the internal state may not recognize it because it's too small, slow, like adiabatic approximation. Then they can use advantage of lasers and so on, and then organize it into a line or on a lattice, and then do quantum simulations. You can do Hubbard model. You can do spin chain and many, many other things. So already I showed you the Paul trap. And the pending trap is a beautiful idea. You know, it reminds me of quantum Hall effect. So this is the idea. The idea is, you look at the top corner picture. You have two metal tubes that are positive. Then the middle one is negative. So there is an electrostatic, you are trying to capture it, but the same physics that you used before, it will not stay in one place. There is no minimum. So it will run around and go to the boundary. But what you do is now you apply a magnetic field along the axial direction. Then there will be cyclotron motion. And what you essentially find is the cyclotron orbit will keep drifting. So what is called the guiding center will be bound. So before it escapes, it will come back. So it's exactly like in quantum Hall effect in two dimension. When you have an electron in the absence of any electric field, apply a magnetic field, they will go in cyclotron orbits. Then apply a small electric field, the guiding center will slide along the electric field. So here the electric field is constant in this radial angular direction. So it's kind of undergoing this guiding center motion. It's as simple as this. And this is another trap. And I think they have pending trap in here in IQC, we will see. So this is the thing that you know you can, I could not find any simulations of this, but this is beautiful. And what is interesting is when you want to have a control over atom, you need big room like apparatus. The smaller, you can imagine you want to control quarks, you have LHC, which is a huge several kilometer ring, diameter rings and so on. So you can imagine you can want to have Planck control, you'll use the entire Earth and so on. That's why, okay. Now this picture shows you some molecules. I have C60 molecule, and then I have another set of molecules to which some I have attached a side group, some organic molecule. Now, if anybody, you know, if who is learning quantum mechanics, and if you ask him, will these molecules behave quantum mechanically or classically? He will say, of course, classically, because it's so big. I can understand electron behaving classically, quantum mechanically. Even proton is semi-classical. When it comes to, you know, like molecule, it should be classical. But however, thanks to our experimental colleagues, they have taken set of molecules like this even 10 years ago and cooled it down. And suppose once they have such a molecule is cooled down, its velocity is zero, then the de Broglie wavelength will be very large. So because de Broglie wavelength is related to the momentum. So if the particle is at zero momentum, the de Broglie wavelength is infinity. So what they do is they take these molecules and from an apparatus they shoot them and slow them down, and the wave particle interferes with itself. So they have a two slit, and the particle will interfere with itself, and then you can see two slit interference. Even now I can't imagine this happening. I mean, I see that people have written papers, but you know, for example, in some of these experiments, they have this kind of grating. What you see is some C60 molecule produced in chamber, and then they undergo interference. Now in this latest article, they have a gramicidin, some molecule which is used for medicines and so on, 1882 atomic mass unit. So they have a control over the de Broglie wavelength, and they make it interfere with itself. What is even more remarkable is this one. Yeah. So for example, the interference patterns looks like this. What is even more remarkable is this molecule that is interfering with itself, for somebody, it's coming from a oven which is at 1000 Kelvin. So it has a lot of internal degree of freedom which are excited, but still it behaves quantum mechanically. That is because I'm focusing on the center of mass degree of freedom of that particle. That degree of freedom is isolated from the others, and then it interferes with itself, and you see fringes. It's mind-boggling. You know, these are all experiments that are done now. So macroscopic interference of matter wave. You know, it's not macroscopic. Yeah, like 2000 atomic units and so on. And they can do Bragg ray diffraction. Diffraction, that means, you send this wave, matter wave of a single molecular wave through a periodic potential, and then it gets diffracted. You see fringes and so on, Bragg diffraction. So all these things are happening, and they are all yet to come into the field of quantum computing and qubits. But yeah.
I was going to ask whether they see any really new surprising phenomena when they do these experiments that are not just extrapolated. created from...
Sorry, please repeat, speak louder.
Are there some really new phenomena that come out of that, that aren't seen with smaller...
Yeah, for example, this one, and I need to think about it before I convince myself it is possible. Because I have a molecule which is wildly vibrating, because it came from oven which is at 1000 Kelvin. So every vibrational modes are excited. But then, since I am focusing on the center of mass degree of freedom alone, which is isolated, it beautifully interquantum interference. So your question is, are there anything emergent, something new that is happening? I do not know. That's just, these things are at the beginning. I am sure this will be made use of. For example, temperature measurement, because you can imagine two such molecules meeting each other, and that interference will be affected each other, some thermal temperature. In fact, since you asked this question, I'm going to ask Rijibul. For example, you know, this is a trajectory of this massive particle in this pending trap. Now, if this particle is slow enough, then its de Broglie wavelength is of the size. Then I can imagine putting few particles here, and then I can start doing quantum Hall droplets, quantum Hall physics with ions. So that is something I could not find in the literature. So that's a possibility. The parameters are such, because normally you do quantum Hall effect with rotating bosons and condensate, with vertices and so on. Here, in a trap like this, you can put few atoms together, few ions together, and if they behave quantum mechanically, then they will be quantum Hall state. In fact, they are called quantum Hall droplets. If you look at the history of quantum Hall effect, possibility of fractional quantum Hall effect was seen after the experiment in a theory that involved just 6 electrons. Yoshioka and Lee did a beautiful numerical work. They found that when you put 6 electrons in a magnetic field on a sphere or some geometry, you see quantum Hall quantization already happening. So Yoshioka and Lee's thing can be realized here. So this is, so many of these things are in the beginning. Like, you know, when I said Rydberg atoms, who would have thought that Rydberg atoms can be used to understand or to build Majorana fermion? In fact, I should point out, there is a paper by Laflamme. This is a paper, we already, you know, it's a proposal by a colleague, Professor Laflamme. So you can use cold atom traps. So you can set up cold atom and create 2 level. And then you can play with it and discuss the Hamiltonian that Emily talked about, quantum spin chain, which can be rewritten in terms of fermions. And then the proposal is to realize Majorana fermion in cold atom. So this is an emergent phenomenon, because if you think about cold atom alone, if it is a boson, bosons in condensation is obvious, but you can play with it and create appropriate situation. And then in the limited Hilbert space, the Hamiltonian or the dynamics will be that of a Kitaev chain or a quantum spin chain, and then you can have a Majorana fermion. So this is one good example of emergence. This was a prediction by Laflamme and group. I do not know if it has been done experimentally. So if this can be realized, then you can realize Fibonacci anion and many other non-abelian anions. And they have given a way of braiding them and doing quantum computation. Okay, I think that's all I wanted to, yeah, this is, you know. So shall I, this is what I wanted. I wanted to give you a glimpse of what is happening in this field. It's a very rich field. Many things are, in fact, I was looking for one article where everything is put together, so I could not find. So I have put them together into this form, and it's very exciting because I think many of these things are future directions. Like, I am fascinated by this interference of a big molecule, which is at 1000 Kelvin, but it behaves like a quantum mechanical wave. It interferes with itself. It's mind-boggling, and what it will lead to, we do not know. So many things are possible. Thank you. So we will meet. So today at 12. Yeah, what is the plan?
Yes, 12:45. A little before 12:45.
Okay. So you'll all walk to.
Yeah.
So the room number is. It is 251 Quantum Nano Center, QNC.
QNC. That's what I put in.
251. For some reason, I remember this number. I don't know why. Razibul's lab will, of course.
Okay, so are we not meeting at the lab at the beginning? I saw B221. Is that?
Oh.
You said the lab is in QNC B221.
QNC 221? Okay, good. There I failed. Okay. So we meet around at 1, so we'll start from here around 12:45, then assemble there at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll be a little after 1.
After 1, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.